Good evening, brethren. How are we doing? Good to hear. I have a couple of announcements, so let's get these knocked out. It says potluck sign up, but it's the sheet for the picnic in the park, Lord's Day evening, coming up. So this thing's pretty full, but if there's somewhere in here you can help out, I encourage you to sign up there. Yeah, thank you. Okay, and then let's go ahead and open up in our Bibles to the book of Isaiah. We're going to we'll head to chapter 1, I suppose. A couple other quick announcements. Looks like there were some tomatoes in the kitchen that are free for the taking. So if you like those, snag some of those on your way out. And then I also saw organic apples by the ton, I think, actually. So make sure you lighten that load as you take off this evening. So, okay, I think that was everything I was supposed to say. All right, well, we're going to shift over here to the book of Isaiah and spend a considerable amount of time here, probably about the same amount of time in Isaiah that we spent in Psalms. If frequency... So New Testament references to the Old Testament. If number of frequencies is an indicator of importance, the book of Isaiah comes in second only to the book of Psalms when it comes to messianic prophecy. So doesn't mean that it's second important, but if just sheer frequency, the number of times that it's referenced in the New Testament is any indicator, then it's only going to come in number two behind the book of Psalms. So they're kind of 1-2, and so we'll spend a fair amount of time here in Isaiah. Quick reminder, Isaiah prophesies to the southern nation of Judah, pretty close and around to the same time Hosea is prophesying to the northern kingdom of Israel. All right, so I had reminded us a few times that Hosea predates Isaiah's ministry by just a few years, but there is some overlap there. And we can kind of piece those together just by reading Isaiah and Hosea as they reference the kings that were ruling in their time. So very similar as far as history goes. You know, a lot of the warnings are going to be similar, and the nation of Israel is about to go under at the hands of the Assyrians, and then even Isaiah is a little bit further along to start to kind of look towards the Babylonian captivity as well. So because we are continuing through messianic prophecy, but beginning in a large book of prophet that does have so many, I did want us to kind of get a little bit of a running start here in Isaiah as we understand the context as it's leading up to chapter 4, where we will be spending our time this evening. Isaiah chapter 1 is a pretty familiar chapter in the Old Testament, used quite often for stewardships and maybe even Lord's Suppers, where the nation of Israel is being called out by God that, you know, he's no longer interested in their sacrifices. And so that always begs the question, why would God not want something he ordained? Okay, he created the sacrificial system, so why would he then turn around and tell the people to stop sacrificing? Okay, well, their heart's in the wrong place. All right, this Bible I got now doesn't have any headings above it, but I remember my old ESV translated Bible had Israel's guilty of formalism. Okay, so, you know, they're just going through this thing almost like it's tradition in a formal manner, and that doesn't please the Lord. But offering up your entire heart to the Lord, well, that pleases the Lord. So that's chapter 1. That takes us on into chapter 2. We see in verse 1, we get a quick look into spiritual Zion. Verse 1, chapter 2 says, "The word which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now it will come about in the last days, the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains," and all the hair on the back of our neck rises, right? "And will be raised above the hills, and all the nations will stream to it. Many peoples will come and say, 'Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us concerning his ways, that we may walk in his paths, for the law will go forth from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem.' He will judge between the nations and will render decisions for many peoples, and they will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they learn war. So in chapter 1, Isaiah has given us a little bit of look into what concerns God when it comes to Israel's behavior, and it's their lack of true love for God, and that they're just going through the motions. And then we get this peek into spiritual Israel, right? Heavenly Jerusalem, and which is a prophecy of the church, and the Gentiles will flow to it. Not necessarily a reference to the Messiah here, but we get that picture nonetheless. Secondly, we see that God has forsaken the house of Jacob. If we look in verse 5 here in the same chapter, it says, "Come, house of Jacob, and let us walk in the light of the Lord, for you have abandoned your people, the house of Jacob, because they are filled with influences from the east, and they are soothsayers like the Philistines, and they strike bargains with the children of foreigners." Okay. So secondly, we see God's forsaken the house of Jacob. If we jump down to verse 12, we see that subsequently Jacob must face judgment because of God's rejection of them. Verse 12 says, "For the Lord of hosts will have a day of reckoning against everyone who is proud and lofty, and against everyone who is lifted up, that he may be abased." Okay. And it gives us a little bit of a list here of some of the things that God's going to bring judgment on. And I believe those to be there because they've crept themselves into Israel. All right. Lastly, Isaiah pronounces judgment against specifically the leading men and the leading women of Israel. If we jump over to chapter 3 in verse 13, it says, "The Lord arises to contend and to stand to judge the people. The Lord enters into judgment with the elders and princes of his people. It is you who have devoured the vineyard. The plunder of the poor is in your houses. What do you mean by crushing my people and grinding the face of the poor, declares the Lord of hosts." So you see God's judgment being specifically narrowed down to the poor leadership among the men. And then we jump down to verse 16. He has something to say about the women as well. It says, "Moreover, the Lord said, because the daughters of Zion are proud and walk with heads held high and seductive eyes and go along with mincing steps and tickle and bangles on their feet," and goes on, "therefore the Lord will afflict the scalp of the daughters of Zion with scabs." And then if you jump all the way down to chapter 4 here, eventually Israel ends up in a position where seven women will take hold of one man in that day, saying, "We will eat our own bread, wear our own clothes, only let us be called by your name, and take away our reproach." So kind of looks like the Israel's kind of lacking some eligible bachelors in the end. And so now they're like, hey, you know, I mean, they're basically fighting over the guys. And they're like, hey, you know, like we'll do the heavy lifting. Okay. You know, we'll bear our burden. We'll make our food. You know, just give us your name. We need that surname. So that way we're not a laughingstock among the nation. Okay. And they say, we'll eat our own bread, we'll wear our own clothes, only let us be called by your name to take away our reproach. Culturally, it was better to be married than to be single. So this is the state that they end up in. And so what we have finally then is the stage is set for the future messianic leader of Jacob. And that's what I wanted us to see by breaking down the context leading up here. I mean, Isaiah's got 66 chapters, so we're not going to be able to do this every week. But as we begin kind of, you know, a set of several studies through the book of Isaiah, I thought it was good to go through these first few chapters. That's really setting the stage for our first messianic prophecy in chapter 4. And so what we see is Israel's bad. God's going to judge Israel, okay? But then he even gets specific. As he narrows down the problem with Israel is in its leadership. Okay, so now the stage is set for the true leader who would come, okay, the Messiah. So we're gonna see here some characteristics of the Messiah's leadership, all right? So in chapter 4, starting in verse 2, and we'll read the end of the chapter here. It says, "In that day, the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and glorious. And the fruit of the earth will be the pride and the adornment of the survivors of Israel. It will come about that he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy, everyone who is recorded for life in Jerusalem. When the Lord has washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and purged the bloodshed of Jerusalem from her midst by the spirit of judgment and the spirit of burning, then the Lord will create over the whole area of Mount Zion and over her assemblies a cloud by day, even smoke, and the brightness of a flaming fire by night, for over all the glory will be a canopy. There will be a shelter to give shade from the heat by day and refuge and protection from the storm and the rain. I did a personal study through Isaiah a number of years ago and actually taught it in the high school Sunday school class. And, I mean, that's a challenge, you know. I mean, digging some of these things out of Isaiah, and, you know, specifically if you work yourself through chapters 13 through 23, can start to feel like maybe you're drudging a little bit through the major prophet, okay? But the reason why I did it with the high schoolers a number of years back is I said, I'm not teaching this to you because you're going to remember every little detail from these 66 chapters. I said, but I can take you through it through the course of a year and a half. So that way, when you read through it as you get older and you study it on your own, you've got the basic foundational points and aspects of this major prophet. And then you can build on that. So kind of basically just getting them used to it. And so chapter 4, I mean, aside from chapter 6 and chapter 9, chapter 4 was one of the ones that just really, really stood out to me. Just, I mean, really, really encouraging good stuff about the Messiah and about his church. So let's take a little bit of time to unpackage this evening. So the first thing that we want to notice in verse 2 is that in that day, okay, the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and the fruit of the earth will be the pride and adornment of the survivors of Israel. So like, if you haven't worked this through slowly before, it can be hard to miss that we just got two names introduced for the Messiah. Okay? So branch is the obvious one. All right? But the other one is fruit of the earth. So I do want us to notice that. The Messiah is described as both the branch of the Lord and the fruit of the earth. And he's called the fruit of the earth because it's the fruit of the earth who will be the pride and adornment of Israel. Okay? So Israel's pride, its glory, its adornment, okay? The fruit of the earth, the fruit of the land. Okay? The Messiah, the branch. So let's work through this branch concept here. And, you know, as I'm preparing for working through the branch as that title is reserved for the Messiah, you know, it got me thinking about the other dozen places in the Old Testament where the Messiah is given this name. And then I thought, oh boy, you know, I mean, if Kevin shows up, you know, I mean, he's going to have all sorts of comments. And, you know, how am I going to rein him in, you know? So, but what I did and what I noticed is I'm not going to cover all of the references in the Old Testament to the Messiah being a branch today. I will cover a few of them just to show some ties to David. But if there's close to half a dozen other of these, and that means that there's half a dozen other of these messianic prophecies that are coming up that we will study. And the thing that I've noticed about these other references, okay, is that we do get more information about the Messiah in these other predictive texts. So instead of covering the theme branch so much today, we're going to hit it a few more times over the next few months, and we'll continue just to hit it and dig it back up and then see what else the Spirit gives us in the context of this messianic prophecy. Does that make sense? So, you know, typically you see something like this is introduced and it's very strong language for the Messiah. You think, oh, well, I mean, that's a good thing to spend 10 minutes on and just start searching out, you know, all the ways that it's used. But we're going to wait and then cover those down the road. There are a few I have to hit in order to tie some things together. The two that I want to hit specifically are from Jeremiah. And the reason why we want to do this is to show that this branch stems forth from the house of David. I mean, God, the Messiah, he's given these names, and he's given these names for a reason, right? Satan is given his name for a reason. All right? He is the great deceiver. Okay? And so with the name branch, I mean, the first thing we should think of is a tree. Right? I mean, a branch. So we'll dig into that a little more. But what we want to see is when this term branch is being used, it is a reference back to David. Okay? Maybe even as far as Jesse, David's father. So if we go to Jeremiah in chapter 23, we'll just grab verse 5. We've read this recently in the assemblies. Jeremiah 23 verse 5 says, "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, and he will reign as king and act wisely and do justice and righteousness in the land." Okay. Well, we've already covered messianic prophecy saying that the characteristic reign of the Messiah would be righteousness and justice. It's the reason for which he even wars in the spiritual realm. Okay, he's not interested in being the general of some physical army so he can come start thumping people on the head, but he is very interested in the spiritual realm, warring and leading the armies of heaven for the sake of justice and righteousness. Okay, so these themes are very strong. Okay, and in reference to the Messiah. But we see here that this branch, it stems from the house of David. Okay, so the trunk of the tree, all right, is going to be David. And that doesn't surprise us because there's been a handful of prophecies now that we've gone through that have correlated David to the Messiah, right? That, you know, from your name I will establish a king on a throne forever. All right, so it makes sense then that this branch is leading back to David. While we're in Jeremiah, let's go up to chapter 33. Then 33 verse 15, and then after this, if you have any thoughts banging around, it'd be a good opportunity to pause here for a second. Jeremiah 33 verse 15 says, "In those days, and at that time, I will cause a righteous branch of David to spring forth, and he shall execute justice and righteousness on the earth." So these themes are very, very strong. Okay? I do want you to notice that the branch springs forth. Springs forth. And we'll come back to that later. Any comments so far on the branch and its stemming from the tree of David? Okay, if this is new for you, if the branch is new, if this idea of stemming from David, just understand that God made promises to David that from his lineage would come the Messiah. And we read Matthew 1, and Jesus fits the bill. Therefore, that's why he is called Christ. Let's go to Ezekiel chapter 17. And kind of preface this for a moment. It's important to know. Does anyone have a King James on them tonight? King James? If you don't have one, is anybody on their phone that could flip over to it real quick? Jared, you have that? Maybe take us back to Isaiah chapter 4. And can you give me the word that they're going to translate for the proper title for the Messiah there instead of branch? So it's going to be Isaiah chapter 4, verse 2. And then I imagine they capitalize the name.
Yeah, it just says branch of the Lord.
In the King James?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Okay. So my gut is wrong on that. If you dig in a little deeper, the literal meaning on that word there is to not necessarily just spring forth, but a shoot. Okay? So there are translations that say that the shoot of the Lord will come. So, Okay, so we have this other English word that appears to be a rendering of this word that's translated branch. What's going on there? So just quick question here. What's the difference between branch and shoot? That's the picture you get. A shoot is younger. Yes. A branch is something that might actually support me. You know, I can walk into the backyard and, you know, swing on that thing, and then, you know, it's kind of 50-50 whether it's going to snap. The shoot is relatively new. So it's going to be a lot flimsier. Okay. So what can we glean from this? The Messiah is going to be flimsy. Well, no. Okay. The Messiah will be new and young. Okay, no. Larry's got a comment here.
Well, in one sense, I think it probably is new because it's the New Testament. It's the new covenant that Christ brings in. And so it's not going to be, I mean, I don't want to say the old crusty stuff of the, you know, of the old covenant. It would be new. So I guess, you know, that could be the context.
Yeah. Okay, well, to kind of reinforce this point here, I did want us to go to Ezekiel chapter 17. I believe we're looking for verse 9 here. And it says, thus says the Lord God, will it thrive? Okay, so what's going on here? So, you know, Ezekiel's got this vision, all right, and this tree's been planted, all right, and this eagle helps out, all right. So then the tree drives its roots down, grows its branches up towards the eagle. Then another eagle comes in, and then the tree starts to, starts swaying towards the other eagle, all right. And he's going to go on to explain this later. It's Israel's doing the one that's doing this kind of thing. Okay? It'd be good if they just solidify themselves and grow towards the Lord, but they can't get it right, so God's going to wipe them out with Babylon. All right? So there's the context. So in verse 9, the Lord's question is, will it thrive? He says, will he not pull up its roots, cut off its fruit, so that it withers, so that all its sprouting leaves wither? Okay, so there's our word that's being used in Isaiah that's translated branch. And here it's translated sprouting leaves. Okay, because at its core, that's what this word communicates. They're shoots. Okay, so finish up our verse here. It says, and neither by great strength nor by many people can it be raised from its roots again. So the picture I'm getting from Isaiah is if the tree in the root is Jesse and David, but there will be a shoot that comes from it, then the tree's been lopped down. Okay? You get one of these big trees that are out here. And what, anybody know what kind of trees these are here that are lining the fence line? What's that?
Osprey?
Okay? I mean, half these things are dead. Okay? I mean, I don't even know how they're still growing. Okay? And I don't mean like just the sheer amount of branches that, you know, fall on the ground every year. I mean, you just look at the things and it's like, I don't know how they're alive. Okay? Now, you chop that thing down, okay? No more branches are coming up, okay? But those stumps do really weird things, and they just start sending out shoots. You ever seen a stump that's got a bunch of shoots coming out of it? Okay? So the picture I'm getting from the prophet is, okay, there was quite this dynasty that was built, but it was according to the flesh. And it was just a mere foreshadow, okay? So the tree that was David, okay, and the legacy he left behind and the kings that were appointed through him, okay, that thing's cut down and set aside when Jesus, who's new, is ushered in. Okay, so the branch there is not only is it branching off of David, okay, being the lineage there, but it is a new shoot, okay, because it's going to go and produce a big giant mountain, okay, Isaiah says. We'll get ourselves back to Isaiah chapter 4 here. Any comments on that? Just did a little digging into the word there and was reminded of some of those things. So then the other title, oh boy, going a little quick here. So the other title that he's given is fruit of the earth. So Jesus would be branch of the Lord, the Son of God. Okay? Yes, Jesus' physical lineage tracks back to David. Okay, but who is his father? The Lord God. So this shoot, okay, It comes from the Lord. Now, God's got the physical lineage lined up so that the people would be able to recognize and prove who the Messiah is. But make no mistake, his Father is the Heavenly Father himself. So the title Branch of the Lord seems to appeal to his divinity. Okay? Then we get this other title, Fruit of the Land. Okay? Well, I mean, that makes me think of the crops that grow from the dirt. And then through what they're able to pull out of the dirt through their root system, they're able to bear fruit. Right? Well, God created man from the dirt of the ground and tells us from dirt we came, to dirt we're going to go. All right? So you get this picture of the Messiah, and he's the shoot of the Lord. He's the branch from the Lord. He's the Son of God. Okay? But he's also the fruit of the land. Okay? Which is going to appeal to his physical ministry. So perhaps referring to his humanity. Okay, so not to dig into that too much and do too much dissecting, but we do have two separate titles, and it does appear that one's, this fruit of the land is further communicating his humanity, which we know that Jesus was made like us in all things. Okay, and that's an important point in the New Testament message and the gospel preaching. So he would come from the land with which the people dwelt. So, this fruit of the earth, it's the one that these people take their pride in and their adornment in, the survivors of Israel. They look to the fruit of the land. They look to the branch of the Lord. So he's going to come forth from the land from which the people dwell. Okay? And the scripture tells us that he was born, okay, under law, which is communicating that he was a Jew. So that's all I had on the fruit of the land. Any comments or questions on that? Okay.
I've heard the other side of the issue on chapter 2 is that the fruit of the earth there is the pride and the adornment of the survivors of Israel that have gone forth with the gospel and reaped from the fruit of the earth. Your take on that?
So let me make sure I understand what you're saying for. You said chapter 2. Do you mean verse 2? Okay. So in that day, the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth will be proud in the adornment of the survivors of Israel. So,
it's what they have, their pride, their adornment, what the survivors of Israel have brought.
So my take on that, when I follow of the survivors of Israel as these prepositions that are adding on value to the initial statement, to me it's directing the survivors of Israel back to the fruit of the land. Now, what you're saying, the fruit of the land is the faithful nation of Israel, the fruit of the earth. These guys are looking to faithful Israelites that have gone on before them.
The remnant.
Yeah.
Because it's going to say the survivors of Israel. So that's a reference to the remnant.
Right. So the survivors of Israel is the reference to the remnant.
Right. Right. So there are those that would say that this verse is saying that in that day, the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and glorious. That's the Messiah. And the fruit of the earth will be the pride and the adornment of the survivors of Israel. So the pride and the fruit of the earth are the things that are brought forth. The fruit of the earth, the pride and their adornment, at what they brought forth, the survivors of Israel have brought forth from the earth. What they've harvested from the earth as fruit. So they will say that that's the remnant that's taking the gospel out and reaping the fruit of the earth. And then they would say that verse 3, and it comes about that he who is left in Zion remains in Jerusalem will be called holy. So it's saying it's been brought into that. So just getting your take.
Yeah, so I've never seen it that way before, but I definitely understand how they're taking that stance. So to be able to comment more on that right now, I don't think I would be able to, but I definitely see what you're saying. And the fruit of the earth will be the pride and adornment of the sons of Israel, this fruit of the earth. So what Kevin's saying is that the remnant, I guess, so when I look at it, I see a clear reference to the remnant as the fruit of the earth. So what are they looking to as their pride and their adornment? My mind wants to shift me back to the Messiah. I certainly see where it comes from. Because that's the first time I've seen it in that light, I don't know if I'd be able to add much more on to that. Yeah, any other comments on that? Larry?
So just real quick, so
I'm going to kind of play back how I hear you saying this and make sure I'm hearing it correctly. What you're saying, Kevin, is that the survivors of Israel would be the church, right? And the fruit of the earth would be the church going out and making disciples, and that would be it, right? Okay, thanks.
Right, and then he further qualified. Yeah, and then he further qualifies it with verse 3. It'll come about who is left in Zion, remains in Jerusalem, will be called holy. Yes. Yeah. Here, you good?
No, I don't. Then it would be they would turn to John 15 and say, you know, he's the vine, we're the branches, we're supposed to produce fruit, and our fruit's supposed to remain, and so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So to yeah, like I said, to comment more on that, probably do a little more on digging of my own. Yeah, it's interesting the way that this is brought together with and. That's kind of why I lean that direction. But, you know, certainly, so what are we doing? We're looking at things that we know to be true from the New Testament perspective and then applying them to the old. Well, nothing Kevin and Larry have said is incorrect. In fact, they're gleaming this insight from what we know to be true, that we are the vine and bearing fruit off the branch. So, definitely see that. Is that the direct connection here? I'm not 100% sure myself. Anybody else have a thought, a take on that? You're passing? Okay. Okay, yeah. All right. So, yeah, well, speaking of that, then let's dive in here to the survivors. So, not sure how much time we want to spend on this, because, like, this is what we've been covering the last few weeks. Those who survive through the captivity. Remember the last few weeks, even though the number of the sons of Israel be like the sand of the seashore, it'll be a small amount of them who escape. There'll be a small amount of them that are a faithful remnant. So what we see here is that the survivors of Israel is a reference to the remnant who would remain faithful to the Lord. Okay, this language is pretty strong throughout Isaiah. If we go over to chapter 37, and verse 31. Isaiah 37, verse 31. Says, the surviving remnant of the house of Judah will again take root downward and bear fruit upward. For out of Jerusalem will go forth a remnant, and out of Mount Zion survivors. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. So again, a reference to the remnant being survivors. Okay, we see the reference to the remnant there back in Isaiah 4. And then if we go to Joel chapter 2, verse 32. While you guys are turning, I want to see how this comes through. Yeah. It's interesting because the latter part of this doesn't make it into Acts chapter 2, but we're familiar with Joel chapter 2, verse 32. It says, it come about that whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be delivered. Okay, and so that's how it comes through in Acts chapter 2 when Peter's preaching the gospel. It says, whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And if we continue reading here, it says, for on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, there will be those who escape. As the Lord said, even among the survivors whom the Lord calls. So again, just showing a connection between the remnant in that's prophesied of in the Old Testament and them also being survivors. Okay, even though they be numerous, they will be a remnant because Israel and Babylon will perform a number on God's people and whack them down a little bit, as God desired them to. But of those who would come through and eventually make it into spiritual Jerusalem, a reference to the remnant, but they indeed had to escape. They had to escape on through and follow God's leadership through the Babylonian captivity. Okay, let's see. No, we're not going to cover this all. Okay, well, now there's no pressure. All right. And so in Isaiah 4 here, I'm intentionally coming back to some of this stuff later. Clearly, the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and glorious. Again, we have covered this in other messianic prophecies. That is no reference to his physical stature, his physical appearance. It is his character that makes him beautiful and glorious. We're also told that the saved, the survivors, are a part of Zion. So I do want us to read Hebrews 12 tonight, and then just kind of make one point from this. Okay, Hebrews 12, verse 22 says, "You have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to myriads of angels, and to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood which speaks better than the blood of Abel." So the saved, those who escape and then become saved, Isaiah tells us will become a part of Zion. Now that doesn't surprise us. But what I did want to establish tonight is that this usage proves, okay, from Isaiah chapter 4, this usage proves that the Old Testament city was just a type of the true Zion. Now we understand that, which is the church of Christ. So what I want to add on to that is, in the light of messianic context, okay, these studies that we're going through, Zion and Jerusalem should be interpreted in the light of Hebrews 12. Always. Okay. So, all right. Maybe that already made sense. You know, we say turn to Hebrews 12, and half of us are like, okay, you know, I've got those three verses memorized. We understand that God's interested in heavenly Jerusalem, Mount Zion, the church. Okay. But what we see then is in this prophecy, okay, it establishes that the physical mountain was a mere foreshadow and type, which we understand. Like, that is driven home quite a bit, okay? Because you have to use Hebrews to undo so many kinds of false teaching that are out there, okay? But what I wanted to add to that for the purpose of our study tonight and for the future is that then, in the context of messianic scriptures, Zion and Jerusalem should be interpreted in the light of Hebrews 12 all times. Okay, because that's what the Spirit's giving us there in Hebrews 12. So I know we appreciate Hebrews 12 and that we understand it, but understand in the light of messianic context, like, that's a reference. So that's why we see this in chapter 2 in Isaiah, and we read it, and now we're seeing again in Isaiah chapter 4. So I think that is where I want to stop, because then what we can cover next week, maybe quickly, and grab like Isaiah 7 next week, which is pretty straightforward. But we're going to see that those who are in Zion remain holy. Okay, and then they're recorded for life in Jerusalem. So this is the stuff I just want you thinking about, you know, for next week. Then you can kind of bring your thoughts and your comments to class. Like, kind of cool, right? Like, what's being prophesied there? Well, because the branch is holy, all right? Those who abide in his holy city, they're holy, okay? So, you know, it's not just that we need the New Testament to show and to explain that God has purified a people for himself so that they'll be holy and blameless. But this holy and blameless thing for the church, man, it's even back in messianic prophecy. Okay, the extension of his righteousness, and we'll see that as Paul writes that in Philippians. And then not only would they be holy, but they're recorded for life in Jerusalem. Anyone hearing a verse ring in their head from the New Testament? Like, we'll cover that. And then 4 through 6, all kinds of just really, really good things in there. Closing comments this evening,